Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, and it's a pleasure to see all of you. It's good to see our visitors, and we welcome you back. Terry is still under the weather. He has really had a really rough time in the last couple of weeks. It's a sinus infection, so he is not here today. Talked to Mike Friday, and then Molly texted me this morning, and Mike is still having some pretty serious problems, so he's not going to be here today. I'm not sure about Chris and Unica, but it's good to see everyone out that is. Our lesson this morning comes from the 1 John, and 1 John is our text of what we are studying about this entire month. And we have now come today to the second chapter of 1 John, verses 15 through 17, where the Bible reads, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is of the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." Our subject this morning is, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Because this love of the world is a forbidden love, and is a love that will cause us to participate in the sins of the world. It is a love that will cause us to follow after Satan instead of following after God. In John 3:16, the Bible tells us that God loved the world. He so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son to save it. Because God realized the corruption of the world, and he realized that man without his help was doomed. So God gave his Son that those that loved him and followed him might have a way that they could defeat the power of Satan. This is the divine love of God that he gave to humanity so that the sinner might have an opportunity to escape the sin and the contamination that is in this world. This is basically the same thing that Paul wrote in the Colossian letters 3:1-3 that said, "If you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your things on things above, set your mind on things above, and not on things of the earth." Only God is eternal. The world and its disciples will all be destroyed. We're going to talk for just a little while this morning about the admonition that John gives us, love not the world or the things of the world. Let's go to Heavenly Father in word prayer. Our text this morning begins with a command. It is the only command that John gives in these three verses that we are discovering this morning, verses 15 through 17. 1 John 2. So I suppose that because there is one command given, that the emphasis of the teaching that John has given us is to emphasize the command that he has given us, and the rest of the words then of this passage will be to enforce the commandment that he has given. Verse 15 begins with the commandment that John gives us. Do not love the world or the things in the world. Everything else in this text is an argument or an incentive or something to back the statement that John has made. He said the reason that we should not love the world, and this is what he is trying to prove, don't love the world. That is a commandment. Love for the world, John says, pushes out love for the Father. Because he continues, if anyone loves the world, then love for the Father is not in him. So the first incentive that John gives here is that if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. You can't love the world and love God at the same time. That is the point that he is striving here to make. Love of the world pushes out love for God, and love for God pushes out love for the world. You've got two extremes here. You've got the world that is sinful. You've got the world that is unholy. You've got God that is holy, and there is no sin in him, and you cannot mix the two. It's like oil and water. They simply will not mix. So we're right back to that same old theme that we have followed throughout the entire Bible, right and wrong, left or right, black and white, dark and light. And now we're here with the same thing again as John is talking us about. You either love the world or you love God, and there's no middle ground. Jesus said in Matthew 6:24, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted or loyal to the one and will despise the other. He says you cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I knew what mammon meant, but I didn't know exactly what it meant, and I looked in three dictionaries before I finally found the word. I've got two huge volumes of an old dictionaries of the English language, and I finally found the word mammon in the big one. Mammon is riches or material wealth or the love of money. Jesus plainly says here, you cannot serve both God and wealth and evil money, the love of money, because the two are totally different. John said, don't love the world. Don't love the world and don't love the things that are in the world, because if you do, you have been put in a class of unbelievers, because if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. This is a very strong truth that John is trying to teach us here. It's a very sobering thought that John is talking about here. And this is something that affects each and every one of us. And that's the point of this teaching. In verse 16 comes the explanation and the support of the commandment that John has given. He's given the commandment, don't love the world and the things that are in it. And now, he's going to tell us why. He's already told us that if we love the world, that we don't love the Father. And you have to make your choice. But now, he is giving support and explanation of the arguments that he's already started. The reason love for the world pushes out the love of God is because, and then it continues in verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, these things are not of the Father, but are of the world. Now, if you want to take this 16th verse and leave out lust of the eyes and of the flesh and pride of life, here's exactly what the verse says. The reason love for the world excludes love for God is that all that is in the world is not of God. God is not of the world. The world belongs to Satan. It's under the control of the devil. It has its own ways and attitudes and rules. But the world of God is something that is entirely different. Now at this point, Jesus could have rested his case. He has presented the point that he wants to make. He has given proof of the points and told them why. And now he is continuing and going a little further. The world is controlled by Satan. And the reason love for the world excludes love for God is because the world is not of God. So if anyone wants to say, I love God, and you don't obey him, then it's just empty talk. He could have rested his case, but he continued. The love of the world and the love of God cannot coexist together. And now he's going to give us a couple more arguments to explain this point that he has made. John continues in verse 16. Here he said, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. These are not of the Father, he says, but they are of the world. Now, the world owes its existence to God because God is the one that created the world. And there's nothing wrong. God expects us to see the beauties of creation. He expects us to see the perfection of creation. He expects us to be awed and to understand that he is behind every bit of it. The world belongs to God. God created the world. But now, we're admonished not to love the world, but to love God, because the world is now corrupt. Not as God created it, but as it has become, the world is now corrupt. And God says, John says, that you need to shun it. It is no longer the perfect creation that God created in the beginning. When he created a world, and then he created man, and he created woman, and he put them in this garden of perfection and beauty, where they could live with him forever in peace and comfort and security. And then Satan comes along. And Satan causes a woman to sin. And she causes a man to sin. And now sin and corruption have entered into the beautiful creation, the perfect creation which God has made. And now there is corruption in the world. It belongs to Satan. And John says, don't mess with it. Stay out of it. He continues here. He mentions three classes of evil and three classes of sin. He talks about the lust of the flesh. He talks about the lust of the eyes. And he talks about the pride of life. I'm going to tell you, when you take these three things that John is talking about, you find the root, the basis from which every sin that has ever been created by all humanity that will ever be sinned against God, all sin derives from one of these three things that John has mentioned. One of these three categories is responsible for 100% of the sin. So this is important when John's telling us. And it's not an easy thing to read. It's not an easy thing to have to understand. But this is what John is telling us, and we had better be aware of the teachings that John is giving us. He begins with the lust of the flesh. This is a natural desire that is associated with flesh or with humanity. The point of the fact is that humans are weak. Humans were not built to live and to avoid sin. Humans were built to live with God in perfection forever in the Garden of Eden. And then when Satan came along, he changed the entire game when he corrupted everything that God had done. Humans are weak. In Romans 8 and 3, it said that the law, and this being the old law, could not do in that it was weak through the flesh. So God did, by sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh on account of sin, he condemned sin in the flesh. What he is saying here in Romans is that the law could not ruin, the law could not defeat sin, because sin was in the world. Sin could not be justified in someone unless someone was able to meet and to fulfill the commandments of God. So God sent himself in the presence in the body of his fleshly son that he might live the law perfectly, thereby justifying the perfection which God expected and demanded. And now through the perfect life and the blood of Jesus Christ, we have an advocate with the Father. Not because we were sinless, because no man is, but because of the sinlessness of Jesus. He came to overcome sin by living a perfect life and thereby defeating sin and defeating Satan. For a definition, sinful flesh, or the lust of the flesh, is a natural propensity or a natural thing for humans to desire. Humans will desire the sinful lust of the eye, and Satan has made sin so very attractive that it's people are drawn into the sinful practices that the devil has put in front of them. And sin is attractive. Sin is very attractive. The world has done it, and Satan has done it. He's made it attractive. He's made it alluring. He's glamorized, and we see it in movies and in books and radio. Everything we look at, it has been glamorized. But John says that doesn't mean that it's not dangerous. But we are drawn into our sinful practices by the lust of the flesh. The lust of the flesh is that part which is in the world that John warns us about, that must be subdued, because sin is the unholy promise of the devil. Now, some religions teach that humans are born, and when they are born, immediately they are sinful, deprived creatures. Now, that's not what the Bible tells us, and that's not what John is telling us here. This is a very misleading statement. It is true that all humanity and all flesh sins, but it didn't happen with birth. Newborns and children are not sinful. They are innocent. And until they mature to the point that they know what sin is and they understand the danger of sin and they fall to lust and commit sin, then they're innocent of the sins that they have done. Sin is a transgression of the law. 1 John 3 and 4, it is not something that is inherited. All sin, all are born into a sinful environment. But sin is a lust that is confirmed and committed by the individual. It is not inherited by birth. 1 John 5:19, John says the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. So he's saying since lust of the flesh is part of the world that Satan controls, it is the place where Satan can successfully gain control of a human, we need to resist it. James 4 and 7 says, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. What James is telling us, if we put up the right defenses and we are trained properly in our conscience and in our behavior and in our relationship with God, that we will have the right defenses and we'll be able to protect ourselves against the assaults of the devil. God's people must guard their hearts against the devil's merciless assaults, because he is as a roaring lion going about seeking who he may destroy. And this is the danger, and this is the definition, and this is why John warns us to beware of the lust of the flesh. Then he goes to the second one, lust of the eyes. What we see affects us. What we see, we want. What we see can cause us to lust. What we see can lead to sin and destroy us. That's why that we need to screen out some things that otherwise that we would look at, because to see these things, the lust of the eyes will affect us adversely, and even the strongest of people have been caused to stumble by the lust of the eyes. Let me give you some examples. King David, the chosen man of God, God loved him and he loved God, and it was a wonderful situation. He was an excellent king for the Israelites. But the Bible tells us in 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter, it said that as David was up on his roof one day and he's looking down to a neighboring roof, he sees Bathsheba, a beautiful woman, taking a bath. And it said that what he saw, lust of the eyes, what he saw led him to adultery with her, and then to a complicity in the murder of her husband. The sexual lust that was brought on when David saw this beautiful woman brought consequences that lasted through his family and his children and their children for generations, a multitude of sins, and a serious consequence for the family of David because of what he saw and the lust that happened and then the things that happened because of it. That's why John warns us against lust of the eyes. How about Achan? Remember Achan? He was the Israelite. And as the Israelites are going into the land of Palestine and they were defeating all of the people that had control of the land, because God said, I'll help you defeat them, and then I'm going to give you cities that you didn't build and crops that you didn't plant. I'm going to give it to you as your inheritance. So they were going into the land of Palestine and they were winning all of the battles and God was with them. But God told these people when they went into this battle, everything in this country is corrupt. Everything is contaminated. Don't touch it. Don't keep it. Don't mess with it. Leave it alone. No spoils of war. Well, Achan couldn't help himself. It was lust of the eyes. In Joshua 7 and 21, when the children of Israel realized that God had forsaken them, and they began to ask why, they found out it was because Achan was the one that caused the sin. So they brought Achan up before the group and asked him questions. Then he confessed it. Joshua 7 and 21, when I saw the spoils, the beautiful Babylonian garments, when I saw the 200 shekels of silver, when I saw the wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them, I took them, and then he hid them in his tent. And because of the disobedience of Achan, disregarding the laws of God, he turned his back on the children of Israel and began to lose the wars that they were winning. The lust that this man Achan had when he saw the well brought about not only his death, and the death of his wife, and the death of his children, and the death of his animals. They were stoned to death, and then with all of his possessions, they were burned in the camp of the Israelites because of the disbelief that Achan exhibited when he saw the things that he wanted. This is lust of the eyes. One more. Eve, the mother of mankind, saw forbidden fruit. One thing was denied them by God. She saw this forbidden fruit, and Satan was able to convince her that she needed it. And she says in Genesis 6, 3 and 6 that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree desirable to make one wise. And she took of the fruit and she ate. Her lust for knowledge and equality with God caused this sin because of the lust of the eyes. Sometimes you just have to turn around and run from these lusts of the flesh and the lust from the eyes and the things that appeal to the eyes. Sometimes you need to avoid these things and mask yourself so that you're not looking at things you're not supposed to see. I guess it's my mind, but I remember the song back in the 70s, Roger Miller, I think it was called The Streak or The Streaker. Good song, really a catchy little song. And I remember the song ending, "Don't look, Ethel." I think that's pretty well. That's a very simple truth. It's a very simple statement. But I think it pretty well describes just exactly what John is trying to say here. Don't look. It's lust of the eyes, and it has a very serious consequence. Then we've got pride of life. Pride of life is a precursor to destruction. Proverbs 16 and 18 said, "Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall." Pride keeps one from submitting themselves to the obedience of God. Pride causes one to not accept the truths of the word of the gospel. Pride keeps one from living in harmony with God and the teachings of His Son Jesus. Pride will keep one from becoming holy and living a holy life. Now when you go to Romans 1 and 30, you will see where pride is listed according to the evils of the world. Because pride, the proud are classified with backbiters, with haters of God, with violence, with boasters, with inventors of evil things, and those that are disobedient to parents. This is a serious thing. The pride of life is a very serious thing when we become so caught up in our own importance that we are unfaithful and unable to bow ourselves to the will of God. When one becomes so enamored in their own importance, they become easy victims of the devil. And it doesn't take the devil a lot of convincing to bring them around to his way of thinking. Pride is a downfall and will cause a downfall. It's very interesting how John has done this. He's taken three verses and he said, don't live in the world and don't be part of it. And then in the second verse, he tells exactly why. He mentions the very worst foes of humanity, that humanity and mankind will ever face, that be sin, that be the world, and that be the devil. And every sin of mankind has been rooted in one of these three warnings. This, I suppose, you could call the unholy trinity of evil, and it's set against everything that God has given us that is good. It discredits, it disparages the sacred trinity of God, the Son, and the Spirit. And that's the trinity that stands between us and allows us safety and salvation. And now we conclude our study with verse 17. John then says, as the world is passing away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. This is the truth of the Bible that has been taught from Genesis to the very last chapter in the book of Revelations. And it's very, very simple what it says. God will win and Satan will lose. John emphasizes the foolishness, the folly of following something that is going to be destroyed. Take hold, John says, of something that will last. Take hold, he says, of something that will endure. Take hold of a solid foundation that you can build your life on and not be let down by the things of the world that are going to pass. Jesus said, this comes from Luke 6, 46 through 49. Jesus asked the question, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I say? Why do you call me Lord and do not obey me? Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you to whom it is like. And then he gives two examples. He said, the one that obeys me is like the man that builds a house, who digs deep in the earth and lays a foundation on the rock. Then when the floods rose, the stream beat vehemently against the house. It could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. But he that hears and does nothing, or hears and does not obey, is like the man who builds a house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of the house was great. There's only one solid foundation here. There's only one thing that we can build upon, And that is the only evidence of the faith of man. Christ is essential, and it is vain, and it is empty when we follow the world and do not obey the commandments of the Lord. That's why James, John says, do not love the world, it is doomed. The world, the devil, and all that is in it will be destroyed. And if we don't avoid God, if we do not obey God, we will not avoid the destruction that the world will have. So John's admonition, love the Lord, obey His word, be saved from your past sins, abide in the Lord, and He will abide with you. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that does not will not be condemned. And that is the promise of the gospel plan. John patiently warns us, but he warns us with some expediency and some zealousy here. Do not love the world or the things of the world. Love God, because the world will be destroyed. And that is an admonition that John, Apostle John gives us in the first chapter, chapter 2, first book, second chapter, verses 15 through 17. Let's have a song of invitation. If we can help anyone, we ask you to come forward as we sing.